I think I've lost my voice shouting out. The competitor in me always comes out no matter what I'm going to say. Got to win this. Seriously. I'm really thrilled to be here. Out of all of the days, this is the day that matters. Everybody else can get on with it. Get on. And I wanted to be here because it matters, because you're not just the future, you are now. And I'd like to tell you in some of the remarks I've prepared exactly what I mean by that. But secondly, if you were not going to listen, I also need a favor. Because to get me out on a Sunday, you know, I've got to have some return here. And I've got a presentation coming up in a few months' time to a group in the EU who are fundamentally focusing on the issues that start around. And I'm helping them with regards to the education programs and how we can get the youth of people involved. And I've got a presentation. You'll see at the end, I'm going to propose a hypothetical story. I'd like you to talk about it today, but I really would appreciate you contact any of the facilitators and send your ideas to me. And I want to put them in the presentation. Okay? So that's the deal. When I found out I was coming here today, I told my son and daughter that I was speaking at this very important event. They asked, oh, by the way, this is just slightly older than you, okay, both in the mid-20s. So they said, what are you going to talk about? How to build the world you want, I replied. My son gave me one of those quizzical son-type looks. The world we want. I nodded. At this point, my daughter, the trainee lawyer, followed with, you can't be serious. First of all, you are too busy building the world you want. And if you claim you are really trying to build the world we want, then it's very clear you're either not listening or not up to the job. So, suitably sponsored by my family, I still decided I'd come and give this speech to you. So, I don't know how many of you remember, it was the science fiction writer and pioneer of satellite technology, Arthur C. Clarke, who made the point that we now live in a world where half the things we know at 20 are no longer true aged 40. And that half the things we know at 40 had never, ever been discovered when we were 20. I find it fascinating to look back and that in my lifetime, no remarks how long that is, please, but in my lifetime, literally, the knowledge of the world has doubled. And for you, that pace is just going to accelerate. Just think about that. But let me paint the picture a slightly different way. When I was your age, there was no prospect of the Berlin Wall coming down. East and West Europe were divided physically, economically, and socially. The horrors of apartheid in South Africa showed no signs of being resolved. Black people could not share the same buildings or transportation as whites. Inequality, or as I call it, the lack of inclusion, were present everywhere in the world. So that was the world I inherited. And I must say, we've made some progress. Fragments of the Berlin Wall are gazed at in museums. South Africa now has its third black president. And we have an African descendant as president of the United States of America, where we also have a female Secretary of State. But we're by no means there yet. After all, we still do get most of our energy from dead plants. But it's important that you actually realize right here and now, particularly you, the leaders of today and tomorrow in your generation, that you can make a personal difference. And I just share a couple of examples for me that the IBM team know about with you. I was actually at Checkpoint Charlie, which probably doesn't resonate with you, but it was the way you crossed from East Berlin to West Berlin on the day of the elections for the unification for Germany. I was there because IBM actually provided the equipment and technology and know-how to allow the vote to take place. I've represented IBM in South Africa since 1985 in our drive and our energy to make that a free society. and some of the people in the room here, Joseph and the rest of them, I met with them on Thursday, and I showed them a photograph of me being accommodated into one of the tribes as a thank you from President Mbeki for what I've done in my career. And I share that with you not out of arrogance. I share that out of the fact that one day I was sitting in an audience just like you, and somebody one day, one afternoon at Nottingham University on a visit, inspired me that I wanted to do something with my life, not just participate. I wanted to really make a difference. And that's the real challenge I'm asking of all of you today. So think about the challenges you face. We've had many up here. Climate change, the Middle East, global equality. And what about the scientific challenges? Renewable energy, we've discussed. But how about we start to look at defeating cancer and other diseases killing people all over the world? Nuclear fusion, and perhaps even space elevators. Some of these things seem beyond difficult. Yet I fully expect your generation to see many, if not all of them, become part of your everyday life. So what is it that you need if you are to play your part in making the changes that are necessary? I was smiling on my way in on Friday morning. I heard a wonderful line on the radio which applies to today. Young people spend far too much time on the internet, watching TV and listening to iPods. Well, nothing new here then. Older people telling younger people that they're doing it all wrong. It's been going on forever. Even the ancient Greeks. 2,500 years ago, Plato declared that this new innovation, writing, was in grave danger of killing the noble art of memory. So my first piece of advice to all of you this morning is be very selective in whose advice you take. For a number of years, I've been involved in an industry group called eSkills, whose mission is to improve the development of the technological skills of the country, and in particular focusing on younger people. Now, you should check out their website, eSkills.com. And in particular, one element of that called bigambition.co.uk. It's a fantastic website designed for people of your age to look, answer questions, and it gives you a lot of indications of the kind of careers you might pursue, and gives you the chance to read from people 2 or 3 years older than you on how they got to what they're doing in society. It's all very accessible. But it was in this role as eSkills that I actually was asked a few years ago by Tony Blair and the government to look at building an IT academy. They'd just launched with Sir Philip Green the Retail Academy for people wanting to work in the retail industry. But when I was asked, I thought, I didn't actually say this at the time, but how boring. I mean, great, we build a new academy for 200 to 300 people in the center of London to focus on retail. And I'm thinking, how's that going to change the future of the country? That's just, it's great. Somebody's even thinking about this thing for the future, but just, it wasn't there. So in my mind, I'm doing my typical thing. How can I scale it? How can I scale it to make a difference? How can I address people living in Scotland and Lancashire and Yorkshire and down in the southwest, not just London, because there was no accommodation. Transport's going to cost a lot of money. Great idea, but you're going to have to produce like 200 academies for retail. And it was that moment in time I realized that what we really needed was a virtual academy. So off I went down to Hursley, which is our lab in Hampshire, where we have some of the fabulous talented people of the world, in fact, but certainly of the UK. And down there, they have the mission for IBM to lead all our energy and efforts in virtual worlds. And I love spending time with them, as you'll find. Most of them are in the mid-20s. Some of them are getting a bit beyond it, but, you know, early 30s. But I love spending time because they're always thinking about the new things. So I described this vision I had of the virtual academy. So 4 weeks later, they called me and said, would I like to go back down there and have a look at what they were doing? So I went down there and I sat, and they produced up on the screen an unbelievable virtual auditorium. unlimited seating. It was raked, not flat like this, so it went up into the distance. Screens behind, lectern somewhere more near the middle than this one has been. By the way, another piece of advice, get there early, check where the podium is, otherwise I'm struggling to get to you guys. But this thing had a wonderful platform, wonderful stage, and they'd even put pubs and cafes outside so people could interact. And then they showed me that it wasn't only just typed format, it was actually spoken words as well. You could interact with the speaker. And multiple language translation. And instantaneous, whatever language you were studying in, print out in your own home of the speeches that had been given. Captured the words, typed, and sent out. It was absolutely brilliant. Everything I had in my imagination, and I told the team they were fantastic. And just as I said, this is great, one of the young women in the team, just out of my eye corner, like parents do, I caught her rolling her eyes and looking up at the ceiling. You know, that expression that you guys do when your parents have lost the plot and you have a clue. They're trying to pretend they understand the music and everything else, but you know they haven't really. And I went, uh-oh. I said, what's the matter? I said, whoa, you know, what's the matter? And they said, would you like to see the auditorium we designed? So I said, yeah, sure, here we go. They'd designed their auditorium. It was a molecule of silicon. And every single particle, quark, proton, neutron, was a seat. And the molecule was just rotating in space. And in the center of the space was a holographic projection of whoever was speaking, and multiple versions of the charts that were up on the walls just rotating and being focused on by whatever seat and whatever angle anybody had. And I thought this was absolutely unbelievable. And I suddenly realized that despite 33 years in IBM and nearly 40 years in business, despite a maths degree, despite the fact that I really do stay at the leading edge of techie, which these guys in the front will tell you, I really do, I suddenly realized that my lifetime had made me think the way I do. Despite me wanting to do things other than, you know, parent dance. And I suddenly realized that at that moment in time, it's so important how much we need to listen to the younger people of today, certainly in the speed and the pace. Because you have lived with this technology all your lives. The rest of us are catching up. You know, I'm lucky now in that the percentage I've been involved is greater than the ones that I haven't, but not 100% like you guys. And from that moment in time, I started to change my thinking inside IBM and a lot of the other things I do. That's why you'll find our graduate program and some of the people who run that program here in the audience, the people involved in it are all 1 and 2 years into the company. But I also started to get these guys involved in a lot of the thinking that we were doing in our future direction around Smarter Planet. The thinking is just different. And one other comment, and I think this is something I want to explore even further. I really learned about avatars for the first time. I mean, I know what an avatar is, but if you look at my avatar on the IBM virtual world, it's a silver-haired, oldish-looking guy in a suit. And I thought, that's the way I am, that's the way I should be. I mean, and then I'm suddenly seeing foxes' heads and people with wings. And so you start to ask those questions. And I suddenly realized, by listening to the guys, you know more about a person looking at their avatar than we ever know about a person looking at that person. And most of you will not know this, but the IBMers do. All my life I've worked on diversity and equality, and I've fought my whole life for it. And I suddenly realized the avatar is the ultimate in inclusion, because nobody has a clue what you are. All they can tell is who you are. And I realized again, and I've thought about it so much ever since. I think you guys need to explain that more to my generation and your own parents. And I'm very crazy if my daughter goes off on some date that she's done on and never even met the guy. I don't worry about it anymore after. I obviously worry about it, but I don't worry about, because she's saying to me, I know more about that person when I turn up than you ever knew when you were trying to chat somebody up in a nightclub or whatever. It makes sense. I think we just need to explain it a bit better. Okay, I wasn't the only person. IBM itself has realized how much you can contribute. And that's what today is all about as part of this whole program. And let me just share with you a few things. Since 2004, we've been carrying out formal studies around the world's top business leaders, looking at what the important trends are. But this year, for the first time, we did something different. As well as interviewing the CEOs, we interviewed top students from all over the world, mixed levels, including MBAs, mixed nations, from Russia to Brazil, to China, to the United States, and many of the countries in between. The object of the exercise was to better understand the generational differences in perception and creativity. You'd be pleased to know I don't plan to give you a blow-by-blow account of the entire detail, but you guys do this better than me. Just type IBM Student Survey into Google, and you can get the results. It's a really excellent read, and I think you'll get a lot from it. I'd like to just briefly share some points with you, though, for the benefit of today. The topics I'm going to choose are around globalization, leadership, and sustainability. And I believe they're relevant to you and your lives, but I absolutely believe they're relevant to today's discussion. Globalization. 48% of students versus just 31% of CEOs said that organizations should optimize by globalizing. What exactly do we mean by that? In my lifetime, it's been fascinating to see as communications, transportation, and infrastructures have improved. Small businesses who started local became regional and then national. And finally, many of them are going international. Relatively recently, probably the last 2 or 3 years, we've started to talk about a subject called globalization, where companies just don't participate on an international basis. They literally run aspects of their business, and IBM is a great example of that. The reason I mention this, it's very clear from those percentages that your generation see themselves much more as global citizens than mine does. You see a world of opportunity out there. Second subject is sustainability. In answer to the question, will scarcity of resources impact organizations to a large extent? 65% of students versus 29% of CEOs agreed. Just think about that difference that you see. Think of the impact that change of emphasis can make going forward. A little bit more. Students are twice as likely as CEOs to select environmental issues as the top influencing force. But you are also telling my generation that sustainability is not just about the environmental issues. You're telling us also that it embraces economic, social, and cultural concerns too. But that's enough statistics. I think it's just incredibly clear. Statistics prove what most people have thought anyway, that your generation thinks different to mine. But the one thing I want you to take out of today, and what I say, and Stephen and Tom, is that companies like IBM want you to be like this. We want you like this for the future. We want to employ people like you in the future just because we do think differently. I think one of the other key facts unearthed in the survey was an increasingly complex business and social environment. Students, much more so than CEOs, understand that information and data can be harvested and analyzed to help solve problems. I think this is a great attitude going forward. In today's world, we are amassing an unimaginable amount of data in the world. In just 3 years, internet traffic is expected to total more than half a zettabyte. That's a trillion gigabytes. For those mathematicians in the room, that's a one followed by 21 zeros. But let's put it another way. Today, the processing capacity of the web is equivalent to one human brain. By 2040, It will exceed the total processing power of all of humanity. Now, we have the capability, using performance computing and advanced software tools, to extract the value from the data, allowing us to see the patterns and the correlations. And sophisticated mathematical models are helping us to anticipate and even predict changes in our systems. Where we once inferred, we now know. Where we once extrapolated, we can now determine. And so we're no longer as dependent upon intuition and people's experiences. You guys actually know how to break down the data to help. I think these are serious issues that face the world, and they'll require serious consideration and collaborative decision making by everybody, but not least of which by you, the future leaders. You'll have to build the constituency to deliver on the promise. That's to say, you'll have to collaborate across borders and boundaries like never before, earning trust, getting buy-in, building momentum, to work through these important issues and to get things done. But surprisingly enough, whilst that sounds complicated to my generation, your generation's already proving this. Far from seeing the internet as a time waster, as I said earlier, you're exploring and pioneering new forms of digital collaboration, dissolving physical and political boundaries, and I think that holds you in great stead for the future that you will build. If there's one thing I've learned in nearly 40 years of business, is that the most important asset that you all have is not taught. It's more important than being good with figures. It's more important than being good with people. And I never actually thought I'd ever hear myself say that on a public stage. Your most vital asset is your imagination. It's true for geniuses as varied as Da Vinci, Mandela, Churchill, or even Einstein, who said, "Imagination is more important than knowledge. For knowledge is limited to all we now know and understand, while imagination embraces the entire world and all there ever will be to know and to understand." So I said to each and every one of you, trust that voice in your head. Listen to what it says. Ask questions like, what would happen if we just tried that? Turn these voices and ideas into reality. Know that you are not a solitary voice, but part of a determined and intelligent generation, bristling with ideas and a desire to do things differently. Go beyond making your voice heard, understand your personal true value, and make a difference to other people's lives. Because imagination is the father of creativity and is the sister of innovation. It cannot be taught. It cannot be mandated, but real leaders like yourselves can create an environment where this attitude can be encouraged and nurtured. In my business life, I've always lived by a simple mantra: people, pride, passion, and performance. And inside IBM, it became known as the four P's. Today, I've decided for you, it should be the four I's. Imagination, innovation, insight, and interactivity. There has been Generation X, there has been Generation Y. I think you will be Generation I.